Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour call hosted by Derek Chris. My name is Cheryl and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star and zero on your telephone and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded for replay purposes, and I'd like to hand over to Derek. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Cheryl. Welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour. Today, the material I'm going to go through, which is on the blog site, which I think we are now familiar with. It's, if you want to go on, it's under the safety.nrwessex.co.uk as the hashtag, as it were. Log on there, and then password is Wessex Safety Hour. Everything we're about to go through is on that site already. I've got three items which are shown as headings for us today. One is to go through some stats for last week, including some incidents that took place. Then we're going to go through a near-miss safety bulletin of a line blockage that was up in the Midlands area. And then I'm going to finish off with some material as to what's happening with our safety workshops, and as one or two may already be aware, there's been a couple of additional dates put into the program, so now I have four, so I'll go through those with you and where we believe the three or four, I think it's three, items that we're going to be discussing at those workshops. Okay, so over to the stats side of things. Last week, our safety hour attendance figure was at 76%, which is really, really good. I think the previous week it was around the 60%, so some great feedback coming through. And if you can continue to make sure that those figures are transferred through to the team by Friday lunchtime, again, the information as to where that goes to is on the blog, but it's you can either use it via the app, or there's the Wessex Safety Hour email address at networkrail.co.uk, and that information is collated and then posted as far as our figures are concerned at 12:30 on Friday. Close calls that were reported last week was 72, which again is always very good to see that we're putting efforts into raising close calls, which will hopefully be the rider to save people having an incident or indeed an accident. So really good, keep that coming through, please. Unfortunately, last week we suffered four incidents. Three involved injury to people, which I'll go through in a second, and one was an incident at a level crossing. On the 7th of February, we had three of the four. One was at Barton Mill Access Gate, which is in the Basingstoke area. A technician was attempting to lock the access. When we have, probably remember, it was pretty windy early part of last week, and unfortunately the windy conditions got the hold of the gate, which flew open and unfortunately captured the left-hand finger of the technician who was trying to close it, so bent his finger back, which fortunately didn't cause any lasting damage, but obviously a reminder to us just to be as extremely careful as we can in those sort of conditions and, you know, not take things as one-handed when perhaps two hands would have been better. Down at Salisbury, unfortunately, a member of contract team was helping out when we were doing some work around the track. We were trying to fit plates there. Got his right foot trapped under the track when the jack was dropped, and so that would have been very painful. I don't have any details as to whether that ended up with a fracture or something, but he had his safety boots on, so one would like to think that it was kind of protected, but as I think we all know, there are areas around the safety boot where we can still end up with a broken bone. So the answer there really is to make sure that before we lock a jack that everybody is clear. Clearly that couldn't have happened in this particular instance for that lad to have had his foot trapped. And finally, on the 7th, the incident was at White Hart Lane level crossing, where unfortunately a member of the public became trapped within the barriers. That was after the crossing clear had been pressed for a train to come through. Fortunately, the signal was able to replace the signal, raise the barriers, and get the person released. So that there is obviously the signaller having to take a little bit extra time, I guess, to make sure that his barriers, or at least the level crossing between the barriers, is clear before putting the barriers down. And then finally, for incidents on the 10th of February, we had an incident involving a member of the works delivery team at Byfleet and Newhall Station. A group of staff were carrying his dressing kit down the stairs. Unfortunately, one of the members of staff in doing that activity tore the muscles in his back, and this is being put down due to the weight of the equipment. The person involved, I mean, there's an investigation that's taking place, which is quite likely to understand how this happened, but the person involved was actually on light duties and shouldn't have been there at all, but he was trying to be very helpful and support the team into carrying out this activity. Unfortunately, as a result, he's ended up with torn muscles in his back. So there is a review going on into that as to how a member of staff who's on light duties could have been involved in that. Whether the team were aware he was on light duties, etc., that's the sort of thing that will come out of that. And in future, if any of our team members we know are on light duties, then we need to be protecting their welfare by, despite their enthusiasm to help, that you keep them to one side so that they don't do themselves any further damage. Okay, so that was the four that we have there. We then move on to the safety bulletin near miss. This involved a COS and two operatives who were working in and around the area at Gailey ETE, which I'm going to make an informed guess is around Wolverhampton. They were involved in taking what was a third line blockage for carrying out their work. The previous two line blockages were for delivering material to site excavations, which had been completed successfully. During the third line blockage, the COS and operatives went back to their van to collect tools. As they were clear of the track, a freight train came hurtling through. As I say, fortunately, there was nobody on track or within the forefoot or indeed any equipment left there, which was, as you can imagine, quite a shock to the team as they were come off that particular piece of track. The COS phoned the signaller to report the incident. Having the signaller checked to make sure everybody was okay, he in turn immediately reported the incident, and he was actually stood down from his duties. At the investigation that started, the signaller thought he was actually communicating with a totally different COS in another location altogether, which meant that he put the line blockage down in a different part of the infrastructure, nowhere near where these people were working. So that basically means that we were extremely fortunate that we didn't have an accident, because those staff, although they believed they were working with a line blockage, were actually working on an open line. Prompts a few questions in my mind and no doubt yours. Clearly, there was a fail to come to a clear understanding exactly what was happening between the signaller and the COS. Generally speaking, when we do this, we repeat everything back to make sure that everybody's on the same page, the signal protection, etc. That seems to have broken down in this particular case. The other thing that sort of asks you questions is there an alternative to working within line blockages, i.e. is there a possession? Is it something that could be done at night? I don't know too much about the work itself, so you know, I can only surmise, so I'm going to try and prevent myself from doing too much of doing that. It also sort of begs the question, you know, was there complacency in and around, you know, how do we prevent people from becoming complacent? I I struggle to understand how we could have come to that conclusion in terms of where these lads were working and the signaller thinking that he was talking to somebody completely different. Are your teams reporting into NSC or their own site access systems so it's clear where you are on the infrastructure in case of emergency or an incident? In our case, we have our line blockage request, we go through the GSAC, we have our reference numbers, all of which we quote to Signaler. Our section manager would know where we are working. I think that must be more on the project side. But the final point is one that is valid for every single one of us. Do we ever undertake a safety communication check with our teams to ensure they are following the correct procedures? Now, sitting where I sit as IMDM, I'm mindful that this is one of our regular occurrences where we have these conversations with our team. So I'm liking, perhaps looking through rose-coloured glasses and saying, yes, of course that happens. The evidence that supports that is really just through the information I get from the AITL system or Sentinel system. But do you physically sit down with the teams and do a regular check to make sure that's there? One thing which I'm going to take away from having read through this document is to check with our operational colleagues, because many years ago in a different role, I used to go and sit in the signal box at Wimbledon and listen to a series of conversations, safety conversations that took place between people taking line blockages, not just in our own people but our contractors as well, and the signal, and we used to mark those accordingly as being good or otherwise, and if there was one that we weren't happy with, then we would actually take an action to go and see the individuals and actually sit down and go through a safety conversation with them and checking that they did in fact understand all that they should be doing, and that that particular conversation I'd listened into was an exception rather than the rule. But when I came away from that particular series of conversations, or listening to tapes, I would keep an eye out for when I was there next to listen in to the same individual to just to check that what I'd discovered during the previous discussion with him was actually put in place so that it wasn't a lapse that was constantly happening. All right. So I'm going to check to see if that still happens, and if need be, ask to listen into a few of the tapes just to satisfy myself that my rose-coloured glasses are in fact clear. Right, that's all I have on that one. Which moves me along to our safety workshops. As I say, we've got four dates now in the system. The first one is at Woking on the 16th of March. All four sites have two workshops each day. First one is 10 o'clock in the morning till 1400, and then the other one is 2200 in the evening to 0200. So 16th of March is the first one at Woking, followed by the 20th of April at Southampton, and there is a note on the web to show that Southampton workshops are filling up fast, so if anybody wants to go there, get your name in quickly. 26th of April is a date for Portsmouth, which is at the Marriott Hotel, for those who haven't seen this yet. And then the latest one to go in is for the 5th of May, which is at Guildford at the Mandalay Hotel. There's a maximum of 200 attendees at each session, so we should be able to slot everybody in to see that. So make sure that your teams are aware and put themselves forward for a date to attend one of these workshops. For those who wish to go from the Clapham section, if they let Cecily Blackman or Pauline Thomas know, and their telephone numbers are on the flyer, which is again on the blog. For Woking, it's Sylvie McGregor, and for that's the Woking and Portsmouth ones. If you want to do that there, but any one of the locations, I'll be able to make a booking for you. And Eastleigh is Debbie Catafo. All right, but as I say, Southampton is filling up fast. So if you do want to go to Southampton, I would suggest you go straight to Debbie rather than waste a few hours going through one of the other organisers just in case you miss out. Now, the three items on the agenda for the day is safety leadership, risk awareness, and fair culture. Those are the three topics. We do encourage everybody to come along to these. Don't be put off. Come along and take part. The success of these workshops is purely down to the involvement of our workforce being there and for raising and discussing items. Not just the ones that we're talking about, because there's always a session, general question and answer session at the end. That's always been a bit lively as well. So let's make these as good a success as our previous ones, which will be absolutely fantastic. Right. That was all that was on the agenda for today. So what I'll do now, Joel, we'll open up for any questions and answers on what we've done. And equally, if people on the phone have got any topics that they would like covered on these safety hour conversations, use the blog to not only comment on this particular conversation, but also what you would like to hear. There's an opportunity there for you to put that on at the same time. So take that. You know, we can make these as really interactive as we can. If we're covering the items that you want to hear, then obviously that would engage you even more, which is what this is all about. All right. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Derek. So, ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then 1 on your telephone, record your name, and then press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star and 2. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. We have a question, Derek, and it comes from the line of...
Mark Johnson.
Please go ahead, you're live in the call.
Derek, it's not a question, it's just a heads up for you. Southampton apparently is full. Jane tried to book it yesterday, she was told she can't go.
Oh, right. Okay, thank you. I'll make sure that that's updated on the blog, Mark. Thank you for that. Did you mention any others that were filling up fast, or are we...
No, because Jan comes from Southampton, it's going to be quicker for her to attend one there. The daytime session at Southampton is full, booked, and nobody else can go on it.
Okay, well, thank you for that update. So I'll pass it to you. So it's the 10 o'clock session in the morning that's fully booked.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of...
Chris Goodwin.
Please go ahead.
It's more of observations, two observations. One on modern line-side gates. Now, the locking mechanism, I don't think it's really designed for side entry padlocks like the 37, because it's quite difficult in many cases to actually get the key into the padlock and turn it. It's more designed, I believe, for the bottom entry type padlock like the Abloys, which we very briefly had. Also, these gates are very roughly finished, and they're often a source of very minor scratches. Every time you try opening them, putting your hands through, etc., they don't really seem ideal things for an accident-free environment. The second observation is to do with the misunderstanding between the cops and the signalman. Now, I've often thought it was rather strange that the signalmen don't recognise engineers' line references. So it's no good saying to a signalman, I'm on the RSJ at 43 miles, because they don't know what 43 miles is either. We don't talk the same language as the signalman. They will think about track circuits and signals and stations. We talk about locus and track circuits and signals, so we do have some common ground which possibly the PWA and other people don't have. But it does seem strange to me that signalers don't know what the ELRs are, and they don't necessarily know where mileages are. Full stop.
Right, but in the case when we're taking our line blockages, it's quite obviously paramount that we come to a clear understanding of the line that we're on. And how do I word this without sounding idiotic? When we quote our line blockage to the signaler, we tell them the line that we're stood on, or sorry, the line that we wish to take under protection, I should say, together with the protecting limits for said line blockage. Is that right?
Well, I do, certainly, yes.
Well, I think the signal, I think that's the standard. I'm absolutely certain it is the standard. So I'm trying to understand why, when we're doing this particular activity, that we would want to quote the ELR and a mileage. You're absolutely right that they work from what's on their panel. And I know that we've had some of our line blockages refused because the team have called a line, for the sake of argument, say the down main, and they will have on their panel that it's, for the sake of argument, a down Cobham. So they are meticulous in that respect, at getting the nomination right. So sometimes I think our GZAC system and the panels are actually referencing different lines to what's actually there.
That is another problem, yes, and that has occurred with us, yes, where one panel has a line called one thing and an adjacent panel has it called something else completely. And even we've had two different parts of the sectional appendix calling lines different things.
Yeah, and as you say, that's something which we've experienced, unfortunately, and that has been taken forward. I'm going to use you because it's a long time since you've been on the phone, and you're always good for some really good questions. As far as the issues that we were experiencing, have they now been closed out, or are we still experiencing that problem? Because my understanding was that we'd reached a way forward whilst we get all of these systems tied up to say the right thing, so that we didn't get refused key work because of, I'll say in one degree, semantics, that everybody understood that when we were quoting a line to a signaller, it was the line he had on his panel rather than the line that was quoted on the sectional appendix or whatever.
Well, certainly from my point of view, I make a point now of researching in advance, are there any possible areas where there could be confusion? So before we ever get that far, to find out who's calling which line what.
Right.
But it's never going to be resolved where you're going to have all the panels saying the same thing, is it? So I think that's the only way forward, is for the planner to be aware that there could be confusion and to build that into the plan and the words.
Yeah, which is what my understanding was we were actually driving for, Chris.
Hmm.
Okay, well, I must admit, I haven't seen an item rejected for that reason in the past couple of months. So I'm, again, you know, I'll take my rose-coloured glasses off. If you know any different, or anybody else on the phone knows any different, please drop me a note. It doesn't matter if it's on Woking Delivery Unit or one of the other two. It's irrelevant. I will take it forward, and we will try to get that resolved, because what I don't want to hear is us, A, losing work, but worse still, B, having staff thinking that signalers thinking we're on one line than we're on another, and then we end up with a situation similar to what they experienced in Wolverhampton. You know, we all talk about safety and wanted to make sure that we're leading it in the right direction, we're not complacent, etc., etc. That's definitely something that I'm very keen on doing. So if there are any issues or you're aware of any discrepancies or, you know, one way or another, please feel free to drop me a line, give me a call, tell me about the incident or the issue, sorry, rather than the incident, on the issue, and I'll take it forward with our operational colleagues and our planners, and we'll get to a resolution to. Okay?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. We have another question. The caller hasn't left their name, so if you can check if your line is muted, you're live in the call now. Hello, if you've asked a question, you are live in the call now. I'm going to clear that question. There are no further questions at this time. So just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone.
Right, just while people think if there's any other questions you want to ask, I did download a couple of newsletters that are on the Validium element of the Safety Wessex Hour site, and it did make me stop and think for a minute. The two that I download is Can You Be Forgiving, Getting On With People, etc. And it sort of talks you through some of the things when you're younger. I say that because I'm not as young as I was. Is that, you know, you should always be polite and considerate when dealing with people, particularly new people. Well, I find I try to do that all the time. The bit that made me sit up and think was when it came to when somebody hurts your feelings, embarrasses you in front of, you know, perhaps senior people or whatever, being able to move on, you know, forgive and forget. I think when I was younger, perhaps before I even came to the railway for that matter, I'd probably find that a little bit that you take it, you know, right, give me a chance and I'll get even with that person. What it's telling us here, or trying to teach us, and it's quite right, you learn to survive those feelings of frustration, and actually by doing forgiving and forgetting, as it were, you're actually sort of held up in esteem, if you like, that you can actually get over that, you know, you don't hold a grudge, you get on, you need to be getting on with those individuals. Easier said than done, as I say, as you get older it becomes easier. Not quite so easy when you're young, but that's the sort of, I guess, message we should be trying to demonstrate to our colleagues that, you know, yes, you may be embarrassed or whatever, but rise above it, move on. The other thing, which it does come down to people, I say, of more than 45 years old, so it's probably about 50% of the people on the call, is keeping our brain active, committing, if you like, things, our memory. I know mine fails me from time to time. I can remember what I did 40 years ago, but people's names from yesterday, I know the face, but can I remember their name? It takes time, and it's often after they've left that you then remember who they were. And there's a nice little number of bullet points to help, if you like, keep the brain active, keep the memory cells buzzing around. That's doing, you know, reading, and making sure that you find time to enjoy your interests. Don't become stuck in, you know, like a recluse in the home. Keep your interests going. Things that I find I don't do as much as I used to do, which I'm going to change that, is crosswords and Sudoku. or Sudoku. Loved doing those. And the final point which did make me chuckle was watch educational programs on TV. I tend to watch 99% of my TV is sport, so that's not necessarily educational in some respect, although I do learn some colourful language which I wouldn't have otherwise learnt watching some of our footballers running around. So basically what that is, I'm suggesting that use the Palladium, have a look at those newsletters. There's more than just those two on there. Very enlightening. Keep you young. Try and keep you fit. And it also gives you a bit of food for thought about yourself and indeed some of your own colleagues. So well worth a visit there. So please take advantage if you find that you've got yourself 5 minutes looking on the Wessex Hour blog. Just follow the trail down a little bit and find those newsletters. Right, how are we doing, Joe?
We have one question, and it comes from the line of Cecily Blackman. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Cecily.
Oh, hello, Derek. It's not a question, it's regarding the telephone number indicated on the safety workshop flyer. The numbers for Pauline and I are incorrect. They need to be updated. I mean, is it Camilla Bushell that's dealing with the workshop?
Camilla. Yeah.
Okay then. I'll get in touch with her and let her know.
Did you want me to have a word? She's here.
Okay.
I'll have a word with her to get in contact with you on the right number, not the one that's quoted, and get yours and Pauline's updated so that people, if they're phoning you rather than emailing you, at least have a sporting chance of getting booked onto those Guildford sessions.
Okay then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cecily.
Thank you for your question. We have another question. It's just come through. It comes from the line of... Please go ahead, you're live in the call.
Hello, Derek, I think that's me. Sorry, I was talking to you when I tried to record my name. It's Ben Rudkin.
Ben, good afternoon.
Couldn't help just listening in and obviously listening to Chris's comments as well. So I think I just had two things to raise. First one was comms. I know you talked about it and having comfort that people are listening to comms and challenging their teams on comms. So it's something we take quite seriously in ops, and we used to do a CRG with our train operating colleagues, and also we've been running a CRG, I think it's 8 weekly or 3 monthly, which has been led by John Fitzgerald from Pretty's team, and just overwhelming feedback I get from that, because my briefer deputises that sometimes as well, is that they go to the trouble of booking meeting rooms and organising this meeting at Basingstoke and Clapham, and the invite will go out to quite a large number of people, and nobody turns up, which for me probably doesn't show the right level of engagement with comms throughout, throughout maintenance and IT, I think. So it's one that we've been raising at the line blockage working group, which we discussed comms a few times on, because they always do tend to either be a root cause or a contributing cause to most incidents. I don't think that's unfair to say. So. I think it's something we do need to do a lot more work on, and I think it's something we need to push down, certainly from your level, Giles' level, my level, onto our teams, to sort of impress on them the importance of attending things like this, just to kind of get a barometer of where we are with comms, and hopefully pick up some best practice to put onto our teams.
Absolutely. One of the things I enjoyed doing in the past, because as you say, you don't just find the areas that are perhaps slightly weak, but you also find the really good ones, and they're the ones that we sort of promote that standard.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's one we definitely, so throughout our teams within the CRGs we've done sort of across our function, and I picked up best practice from, we know that the ECROs, the electrical control operators, are generally very, very good at comms, and we were able to use kind of some of the techniques and best practice they did and sort of try and implement it across the ops team, which and it's just things like that, being able to, pick up things from other departments and sort of benefit from that conversation as a collective, so to speak.
I'm sure that Dean, Andy and myself will be more than interested. If you let us know when the next ones are, who's on the, you know, who normally gets invited, we'll make sure that there's some maintenance staff on there to listen into those comms, because it's quite key that, you know, our staff are indeed, you know, coming through in the professional manner that we're expecting and the standard that we're expecting. And if there's any that fall, shall we say, slightly below that, then at least we can have the section managers sit down and do one-to-one rebriefing, whatever it might be, to get us back to the levels of what we expect.
Yeah, excellent, thanks. And the second one was just, listening to what Chris was saying about differentials between what's stated in section appendix on panel diagrams, on CTD diagrams and things like that. It's interesting, so we raised this, it was like 3 months ago, and me and Carl asked for any examples we could find, because the one thing I do challenge from what Chris is saying is that actually, you know, I think if we all agree we're going to call it something, then it is absolutely possible to change these things. So what me and Carl Brewer, the other ops manager, asked about was we asked people to send in examples, because we hear a lot of hearsay about where it's happening, but we always hear it's happened here and it's happened there, but we never actually hear exactly where that is. So the only place that was raised to me was on the up and down Dean line, obviously in the Salisbury and Eastleigh panel area. So just to kind of put that message out again, I'm sure Chris is still listening, is that if the guys do have examples of where we have these discrepancies between documents and between diagrams, then, you know, pass it on to myself and Carl, or even just myself, I can pass it on, because we keep trying to do this. And every time we sort of say, right, okay, we're going to sort it, let us know where we need to sort it, we then don't get the information back. So I'm more than engaged in getting that sorted, because it feels like it's something that should be really straightforward. And, you know, it's something we should be, if we all agree we're going to call it something, then we should just do that. I don't think the fact that it's been written on the panel in one way for the last 20 years should stop us. So that's my opinion.
That's great. What I'll do, because I'm not sure exactly who's on, is I'll drop a note round to each of our section managers. I am aware that we've had one or two instances, Ben, in the recent past, talking a few months back now. So we can flag that through to you so you've got those. And it may be because of what we were trying to do that they've been resolved, but we'll flag them to you anyway, and if they've been resolved, we'll explain what came as a conclusion, so that you've got the full story.
Brilliant. Thanks, Derek.
Yeah. Okay. No problem at all. Thank you for that and for the support.
No problem.
Thank you for your question, Derek. There are no further questions at this time.
Right. Okay. That is fine. Okay. In which case, then I will close. But just to say thank you very much for everybody who dialed in. Thank you for the questions, for the comments. I've got a couple of things which I'm taking away. We'll get this flyer updated with for the safety workshop, so that people got the right telephone numbers and that they're aware that the morning session at Southampton is booked, fully booked. All right. You take care, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll talk another safety hour next Tuesday at 12:30. Thank you very much indeed.